kicked off today. It was another Sunday fun day for Finau. Big Tone puts a hurting on the field at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Goes back to back on the PGA Tour. Is he the man to beat in the FedEx Cup playoffs? And the final major of 2022 begins on Thursday at Muirfield in Scotland at the AIG Women's Open. We'll look ahead to the stories and the significance of the week ahead. Settle in, it's Monday, and it's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
It is official. 2023 European Ryder Cup team has its new captain, and that is the 44-year-old Englishman Luke Donald. Following Henrik Stenson's dismissal 2 weeks ago, there was speculation as to who would replace one of the latest LIV Golf signees, and today that question has been answered. Guy Kinnings, the European Ryder Cup director, had this to say this morning on the decision. Luke is a former world number one who possesses a superb Ryder Cup record, so he undoubtedly has the credentials required to be a successful European captain. He is hugely respected by the players and by the wider support team at Ryder Cup Europe, who have already done an immense amount of work behind the scenes to give him a strong platform for the remaining 14 months before the match gets underway. And here is the former world number one, Luke Donald, so excited and truly honored to be named European Ryder Cup captain. I'm really looking forward to the next 14 months and getting my team ready for Rome. And a good Monday to you, Damon Hack, alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week Magazine. This busy year continues. Your thoughts on the naming of Luke Donald as European Ryder Cup captain?
Well, Luke Donald was one of the candidates in this initial conversation when Europe was choosing its captain earlier this year. You could also make an argument he ought to have been the choice then, because Luke Donald was never part of any LIV Golf narrative. That was known to the committee who made the choice at the time, but they took a gamble and went with Henrik Stenson. The gamble didn't pay off. Better late than never. They've got the right captain now, just a little bit later than they should have had him.
They have someone who is calm, experienced, I'd say steady, professional, and maybe most importantly, successful in the Ryder Cup experience. Four times a player and on four winning teams. When you think about it, you know, 2004, 2006, 2010, 2012, that's also important, I would imagine.
And he's also been a vice-captain in the last two Ryder Cups, so he's seen both ends of that scale. He saw Thomas Bjorn lead the team to a decisive victory in Paris in 2018. He saw Padraig Harrington lead his team to a fairly striking defeat last year in Whistling Straits. So he's got a pretty deep reservoir of knowledge to draw from there.
He does indeed. A former world number one, now the Ryder Cup captain for Europe. For more on this story, let's bring in our own Rex Hoggard. Rex, what's your reaction to the choice of Luke Donald?
Damon, I love the way you just described him as calm and organized and all of these things that we all know is going to make him a very good captain. But the one thing I took away from this morning's announcement and really all sort of the noise leading up to this is how emotional it's been. I've covered a lot of these and they've never been emotional like this, and it has everything to do with how this sort of transpired with Henrik Stenson taking on the role and then being removed from the role. And there was a lot of chatter back and forth. I mean, certainly Henrik Stenson had some things to say yesterday when he finished up at the LIV Golf event. Luke Donald has had some things to say about Henrik Stenson's decision to go to LIV Golf. We got a little bit of a glimpse into the inner workings of how this works today with Luke Donald talking about the idea that he did sign a contract that said he can't go to LIV Golf. And I think this is probably one of the biggest divides I have seen in how where professional golf is at the moment, because you have two guys that have played on the same team. They've been teammates. They've been in the team room together. And now you see how far apart they are.
Rex, how did Luke Donald emerge as the front runner after Henrik? Was it simply going back to the pool of candidates that they had at the outset of this discussion?
It's my understanding, Eamon, that this was really 1 and 1A. I remember having conversations with players about this even 3 weeks ago at the Irish Open and them talking about what a good captain Luke Donald would be. There were a lot of rumors that Henrik Stenson was going to have the captaincy stripped from him. And Luke seemed to be not only the obvious choice, but the only choice. As you just pointed out, he was a vice captain on two teams. He's seen two separate captains handle two vastly different matches differently. He's had a lot of success as a player. He has good relationships with almost all of the players. Moving forward, he was the obvious choice, and this is going back weeks now.
You know, Rex, the narrative for the European Ryder Cup team for the last 20 years, if not more, has been cohesion,
togetherness, the rock in the storm, everyone rowing in the same direction. Is this a mess for Luke Donald to clean up, or is this going to be just a bump in the road in your mind?
I don't think it's ideal because you look at it, like I said, I mean, the emotions of this morning's announcement, the emotions that we've seen really over the last few days, that doesn't dovetail with the person that we know Luke Donald is. That being said, I do think he's the perfect person for the job because you pointed out he is calm, he is measured. He's going to follow the blueprint. We've talked about this for years. The European Ryder Cup team is very, very good at sort of laying out exactly what's made them successful over the last few decades. That being said, time is short. There's a reason why captains get the better part of 2 years to prepare for this. There's a lot that goes into this. You need to worry about how you're going to be the makeup of the team. And when it comes to the European team, that's even more complicated because you're talking about points that they gain over here in the United States versus points they gain on the DP World Tour. You start talking about how many captains' picks you want. You start talking about how you want the golf course set up. He still has to round out his team room. He has a lot of work to do, but I would say he's the perfect person for what will be a difficult job.
Rex Hager with the news. Luke Donald named the European Ryder Cup captain, replacing Henrik Stenson. Is this a mess in your mind?
It is a mess, but, you know, there's an old, great old Grover Cleveland line that in calm waters, every ship has a good captain. And the good ship Europe is not in calm waters right now. And it wasn't going to be even without the Henrik Stenson wrinkle here as well in having to be dismissed from the job, because they're clearly caught in a flux of sorts between generations of players. That was kind of exposed, I think, a little bit at Whistling Straits last year, when some guys have aged out and the next generation at the bottom rungs of the European Ryder Cup ladder aren't quite there yet. The Højgaard twins, they haven't quite climbed up enough at this stage. So it's always going to be a rough kind of ceiling through this Ryder Cup for Europe, where I think Luke Donald is the best possible choice to add some kind of stability to this situation. He's got a lot of things going for him. He's got a solid record in the Ryder Cup. He has the respect of his peers. That's very clear, and particularly the respect of the players that he's going to have as the anchors in this Ryder Cup. And he also has loyalty. And I think that's what's going to count for a lot more. And he had an interesting quote last week when he was asked about the possibility of becoming the Ryder Cup captain. And this is what he said right here, that he was disappointed that Stenson will put his name forward, then go to live, that he understands the logic behind that. And then there's that last line at the end. He says, let me put it this way, I wouldn't be doing a Henrik. And that speaks to two things. It speaks to the character of Luke Donald, who knows that Henrik Stenson signed a contract saying he wouldn't do what he then did.
Right.
But it also tells you the divide that exists here, that players can understand why certain people, including Stenson, made the decisions they made, but the disloyalty in the method of making the decision runs pretty deep. That division runs pretty deep in what has historically been the Ryder Cup team room at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, the thought was that the European players would do anything to defend Team Europe as far as the Ryder Cup is concerned. And now Sergio is gone. The face of the Ryder Cup for Europe is gone. Lee Westwood gone. Ian Poulter, the match play ninja, is gone. But you have someone in Luke Donald who has terrific Ryder Cup bona fides. Go back to 2012, for example, and maybe the moment that is overshadowed a bit on that Saturday because of Ian Poulter's great play on that Saturday evening. You had Sergio Garcia and Luke Donald in four balls against Tiger Woods and Steve Stricker. They had a four-up lead through nine holes. They get to 17, a devilish, difficult downhill par three. Tiger hits it stiff. Luke Donald steps up to that tee box, hits it inside of Tiger Woods' shot, so they continue that one-up lead, go on to hold on to win that match one-up. Undersized Luke Donald. We're talking about someone who on Sunday, Jose Maria Olazabal sent him out first. He takes down big, bad Bubba Watson, who was riling up the crowd in Chicago.
The Masters champion.
The Masters champion beat him 2-1. I think Luke Donald's presentation as an undersized, short-hitting, former number one player in the world will do great things for trying to keep the cohesion together when you don't have that Sergio Rahm group that could have been the latter day Seve and Ollie. Sergio and Rahm, they won 3 points at Whistling Straits. So at least you have someone who has been there, been in those team rooms, and also performed very, very successfully.
And not only been there, but he's been there 4 times on winning teams during what was probably that glory streak in European Ryder Cup history. And I think that's part of why he has the respect of his peers. It's not just the manner in which he comports himself. It's a guy who's not particularly big, not particularly powerful, didn't have a lot of big weapons.
Right.
But he worked his tail off and got to number one in the world during an era of big hitters in this game, and he wasn't one of them. He's almost kind of like a Justin Leonard character in that he's the epitome of professionalism, eked out a few wins here and there, got a handful of wins on the PGA Tour, 17 in his professional career around the world. But there's an interesting narrative that's now going to come around here. Because his runway is shorter to prepare for this, he's been robbed of 4 or 5 months in the process here. And he's going to keep the same backroom team, he said, that has currently been announced, which was the previous captain, Thomas Bjorn, and then Italy's Eduardo Molinari, who are the two vice captains that Stenson had announced. They are staying as part of the backroom team. But because that runway has been shortened and he's going to be more reliant upon the apparatus of the European Ryder Cup team that has existed in the past, and because his team is in flux, this whole idea that Europe is the Ryder Cup underdog every year, which they haven't been for a very long time, they like to perpetuate that myth because it puts more pressure on the American team every year. But now maybe they actually are the underdogs going into Rome, or at least it solidified what was becoming obvious, which is that the European team has a lot more uncertainties and is a lot more volatile than the American team is.
I think you're right, though. Dustin Johnson, who won 5 points for the United States team, is gone. You know, Bryson and Brooks, you know, they're not besties, but two powerful players, two major championship winners, are gone. But I think you're right that if the European narrative of being the underdog, you know, we were kind of laughing at it as they continue to tick off victory after victory after victory. Now I think that has to be the rallying cry of Luke Donald. The shorter time, you mentioned it, 4.5 to 5 months less time to prepare than Zach Johnson. The fact that Poulter is gone and Sergio is gone and so much of that stability seemingly in the European Ryder Cup firmament is gone that Luke Donald can lean on that fact. The shorter runway of time, the fact that players are defecting to this rival circuit to the point where they're willing to give up a European Ryder Cup captaincy, that will be the rallying cry come this match and also leading up to the weeks before Italy.
And that's the key difference here between Europe and the United States. Europe has only lost potential captains. They're easy to replace. America is the one that's losing
potential. Are they easy to replace, though?
Of course they are. If you go back a few years, you had Tony Jacklin, captain 4 years, four cups in a row, and had a great record. Bernard Gallagher, captain 3 in a row. This idea that you have to shed a Ryder Cup captain because it's someone else's turn is so outdated, and this may get us back to the point where if Luke Donald turns out to be a successful captain, we'll give it to him again in 25 at Bethpage.
You've shed about 7 Ryder Cup captains in the last couple of months when you think about it, future Ryder Cup captains.
Well, it's a busy job, and Luke Donald's only been in it for a few minutes, but the Ryder Cup captain is joining us to talk about the honour he's just been accorded. Stay with us.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And WinGrips, the best grips in golf. And by Bushnell Golf and the new Wingman, crank up your game.
Welcome back to Golf Today, and it's the news of the day. Less than 2 weeks after losing its captain to LIV Golf, Ryder Cup Europe has announced Luke Donald will be the man who will lead Team Europe in Rome in the 2023 Ryder Cup. And Luke Donald has a pretty strong resume when it comes to the Ryder Cup. Here's a look at his performance in this historic competition. An overall record of 10-4-1, and right there in singles, you see, in his 4 winning appearances, 3 singles victories against just 1 loss. And we're pleased now to welcome in the Ryder Cup captain, Luke Donald. Luke, congratulations on your appointment. Obviously, there's been some turmoil in this process. At what point did you begin this conversation anew with Ryder Cup Europe about stepping into the role?
I found out maybe a week ago. I know that once the announcement of Henrik was made, they went back to the committee to see who could fill that position. And, I found out, maybe a week ago that I was the man for the job.
Luke, you've said in your tweet what an honor this role is, but you're also some 4.5 months behind where you would have been had you been named back in March. How much can you revel in this moment, or is it about hitting the ground running and getting off with this job and getting some work done?
Yeah, I mean, I still have 14 months, Damon, and I think that's going to be plenty of time to get everything in order. I've certainly got a couple great vice captains already behind me that have done some of the work in the last few months, and I'll certainly be meeting up with them and getting the ball rolling. So I'm extremely excited about this journey, and, I can't wait to get started.
Luke, did you have any hesitation in taking the role because of everything that was going on around it? And did you discuss the possibility of taking that role with some of the guys who will be the key members of your team next year?
No, it really never crossed my mind not to say no, because this is an honor for me. As I said, I've had so many great Ryder Cup moments and memories, and I think being a captain is like a lifetime achievement award in a way. And I've had some discussions with certain players, whether they thought I was the man for the job. And I just certainly wanted them to talk to the committee about, who they thought would be a good fit. And, obviously, whether that was me or someone else, I thought it was important that the players certainly made their views appropriate to the committee. But I'm glad that things have worked out. I'm extremely excited about this opportunity. Can't wait to start getting going.
Luke, as you know, so much of this event is about its history, the passing down of stories and anecdotes and moments. How does Team Europe maintain that spirit when so many essential links, Sergio, Poulter, Westwood, Keimer, GMAC, and now Stenson, are gone?
Well, Damon, I'm sure in 14 months we'll have 12 great guys that are willing to continue to make history. This Ryder Cup has been going on almost 100 years, and I think that's what's so magical about it. This is something that we don't get to do week in, week out. We're a very individual sport. We play a lot on ourselves. What the Ryder Cup brings is camaraderie. It brings teamwork. It brings companionship. All these things that are really important, and it has so much history. And I think that history is really important when it comes to inspiring the next generation. So I'm certain in 14 months' time that we will have 12 guys that are ready to compete.
Were you surprised or in any way disappointed by the decision Henrik Stenson made, Luke? And do you see a role within your Ryder Cup, either in the team room or on the roster of players, for guys who are currently with LIV Golf?
Well, to answer your first question, Henrik made his decision. He has his reasons, and I'm certainly not going to judge them. So I'm obviously excited for the opportunity that arose, and I'm going to take full advantage of that. In terms of the whole LIV situation, again, it's something that's certainly up in the air. There's no real clarity of it right now. There's some legal situations going on. So once things become clearer, then I'll be able to kind of answer those questions a little bit better.
Is that going to be a challenge for you? I mean, you talk about the future and maybe it becomes a little more clear, but in this moment, there is a fracturing at the top of the professional game. How much do you have to account for the potential of players that you might think would be a part of your team that may not be a part of your team?
Again, I think, some of that is hypothetical right now. Again, I don't want to kind of jump the gun and start making stuff that I don't know really what's going to happen. So I do know that, in 14 months, so we'll have a great team. And I'm excited about the process, the journey, and we'll deal with all those stuff that when it comes.
On the stuff that you do actually have a significant say on, Luke, will you try to change the number of picks, for instance, that you're given as Ryder Cup captain, or do you have other guys in mind for vice captaincies who haven't been on the radar before? What's going to be your strategy in terms of how you want to run your team?
Well, certainly, this is day one for me, Eamon, so this process starts now, but we'll be hitting the road running with my two vice captains, trying to figure out the best way to do the picks, do the qualification system that will be announced in a few weeks' time, hopefully, once we've figured out the way to give us the best opportunity to be successful in Rome. And what was the second part? Sorry.
I've almost forgotten actually myself what my second part of my question was there. But in terms of both the captain's picks and
in terms of vice captains,
yeah. Your bubble?
Well, obviously, I'm extremely thrilled that Thomas and Eduardo will still be my vice captains going forward. And, more vice captains will be chosen, but probably in due time. I think the qualification system, the picks, all that kind of stuff needs to be decided before I think about appointing more vice captains, but there will be more down the road.
Luke, you played for four very different personalities, and you think about Langer and Woozy, you think about Monty and Ollie. What type of captain will you be?
Well, I think I've, someone asked me that. Am I similar to any of the captains that I performed under? I think Bernard Langer kind of steps out in mind. I'm a very thoughtful kind of person. I like to think things through. I can see Lathabau's a little bit more of a quiet leader. Certainly think I'll be kind of in that kind of characteristic as well. But, I've always tried to prove myself. I came from Europe and I went to US in the college system and kind of had to prove myself. I won a bunch of college tournaments. And then when I turned pro and played on the PGA Tour and the European Tour, I was this Englishman that didn't hit the ball very far. And probably not a lot of people thought I'd be that successful. But, I managed to get myself to world number one and stay there for 56 weeks. So there's a lot of inner desire and determination to succeed. And this certainly isn't about me, but the captaincy, I have a lot of thoughts about how we can give our guys the best opportunity to be victorious in Rome.
It's been 18 years, Luke, since you went out on a Friday morning at Oakland Hills with Paul McGinley and played your first Ryder Cup match in four balls. Would you have ever imagined the day would have come at that point where you'd be Ryder Cup captain?
Well, to be honest, I didn't think I would be a Ryder Cup captain at the age of 45, which I will be next year. As an individual who's played at the highest level, you always have aspirations to keep playing at that highest level. That hasn't quite happened for me the last few years. I've certainly been playing okay, but certainly not to the standard that I would have liked. But now I have this opportunity. I'm excited. I'm honored. I'm privileged. And I can't wait to get started. And I certainly always had aspirations of one day being a Ryder Cup captain. Maybe not this soon, though.
Well, Luke, as a former world number one, you've hit a lot of impressive shots in your career. But how about 2012, Saturday afternoon, sun going down, four balls, 17th tee at Medina, Tiger already tight. You're one up, having been four up through nine holes. And you step up to this tee box. Where does this shot rank for you?
It's probably my best shot I've ever hit, to be honest with you. I mean, just the whole situation. We were four up after nine. Tiger was doing his thing and pulling us back. And we were already down 10 points to four at that point. I mean, if we lost another match, the Ryder Cup was gone in for sure. And to hold on to that match, to stick it inside Tiger, make that birdie and go on to win the match. And then obviously Rory and Ian won their match behind. And that little spark just gave us an opportunity and a slight idea that we might have a chance to win on Sunday. And obviously, you know what happened at the Miracle at Medina.
Luke, Steve Stricker, who you were in that match with, is the only American Ryder Cup captain who'd never won a major championship. Where if you win next year, you'd be the fifth European captain without a major title to win in the last 25 years. Is there a big difference between the leadership qualities that are demanded of a successful captain versus the playing record of the captain as an individual?
I don't think so. I think we obviously in Europe we value the Ryder Cup. My record in the Ryder Cup is very important to me. I'm not going to take this role lightly. I'm certainly excited to be a captain. You know, I don't think it has too much to do with my individual record, obviously, outside of the Ryder Cup. But, you know, I've obviously shown my commitment through my results, you know, in the four Ryder Cups I've played and the other two Ryder Cups I've been a part of. I've been a part of six Ryder Cups and been on five winning teams. So Europe has obviously had a great run over the last 30 or so years. We've won seven of the last 10. We've won nine, I think, of the last 13. So, you know, and that's through a mixture of very different captains. So we love the Ryder Cup here. We have a certain camaraderie when it comes to the Ryder Cup, and I really hope that will continue.
Well, it only seems appropriate that a wine connoisseur like yourself is named Ryder Cup captain when the year is Rome, Italy next year. Lou, congratulations on the appointment. We'll be watching and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right, former world number one Luke Donald, now the European Ryder Cup captain. It's Luke's moment, but it has been Tony Finau's world, and we're all just living in it. Two wins in 2 weeks for Big Tone. We'll recap how he ran away with his fourth PGA Tour win at the Rocket Mortgage when we come back. You know, he talked about not finishing the way he wanted to last week. This one, really easy walk up the 18th, finishes at 26 under. Back-to-back and belly-to-belly on the PGA Tour. Now a four-time winner wife, Elena. That's her shouting in the background. Surprise, Tony. Kids stay home this week. You know, we're getting close to school time, right? You don't have the kids on the road every week.
It's expensive to have kids on the road, that many.
Let me tell you, Amy.
I defer to you.
It is indeed five-shot win for Tony Finau, age 32, setting that new Rocket Mortgage scoring record, 26 under. So, you know, you fly back home and wife Elena has the phone out. Here's Tony with the trophy. I think that's the Dougie with like the Hawaiian lay on. I mean, he's been doing a lot of Dougies lately, a lot of fun dances for Tony.
Well, he's got a lot of reason to celebrate. 2 weeks ago, we were talking about him as a two-time winner on the PGA Tour, and here we are talking about a four-time champion.
And how about someone, Eamon, who has shown this remarkable vulnerability in this era of tough guys? He's really honest with his feeling, even saying, you know, a winner is a guy who just was losing. You know, you lose forever, and the loser turns into a winner only because he stuck around. Called himself a loser. Called himself a failure, you know, but someone who also is a champion now.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's a loser on the weeks where they don't win in this game. It's what you can draw in terms of the small victories along the way. And Tony Finau had a lot of those small victories, even in that lengthy drought, that five-year drought between winning the Puerto Rico Open in 2016 until the Northern Trust a year ago. He managed 32 top 10 finishes. Now, you can interpret that two ways. You could say that's a lot of money he's made, that's a lot of success he's had. Or the flip side is you can say that's a lot of scar tissue of a guy who got close time and time again and couldn't get over the finish line. Tony Finau clearly chose to process that as the former, that it was the experience that he was drawing from it and the resilience he's shown to get where he is and the self-belief that he's shown to get where he is really quite remarkable at this point, because it would have been so easy for Tony Finau to go in the opposite direction and just be top 10 Tony.
Yeah.
And, you know, a walking ATM who was good for a big check every week but wasn't going to leave with the trophy. And Tony Finau has worked his way through all of that kind of commentary, which included commentary we had at this very table.
For sure.
The idea that Tony was there all the time, but Tony wasn't getting the deal done on Sunday. To see where he is now over the last couple of weeks, it, to me, is really impressive, and it really puts him in as the form horse as we now head into the FedEx Cup playoffs.
We talk a lot about players and their IQ. We don't talk a lot about players and their EQ, their emotional intelligence, their ability to recognize emotions in themselves and others. And Tony is the best at that, maybe in the world, alongside of Rory McIlroy, who I think vulnerability, in his case, is a strength. Maybe it would have been scar tissue for other players, but for him to be able to recognize what it meant to him and his wife and his kids, his son watching at home and Tony almost breaking up and not able to get through that interview, I think it becomes a strength in someone who has the vulnerability to recognize how chancy this game can be, how many bounces can be good, bounces can be bad, and the growth that he's shown. This is the typical path of the player. It's not the 21-year-old wunderkind, you know, Colin Morikawa and Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas notwithstanding. In the history of this game, this has been the age and the time of life for a player to really find his or her feet.
And it's interesting to see how he's managed to get there as well. We had a conversation here a few months ago wondering if we were going to put Tony's face on a milk carton. He was totally missing in action on tour this season. When you look at his numbers from, say, right after the Masters to where he is now, it's at the business end of the hole where Tony Finau has made his improvements. He was 169th in strokes gained around the green. He's now tied for 40th in that category. And in putting, he was 195th back then. He's still not great. He's 116th on tour now. But it just tells you how well Tony Finau does everything else, that if he just tightens up and puts middle of the pack, as he did, he was, I think, 15th in putting last week. If he puts middle of the pack, then that's good enough to put Tony Finau in the mix every week.
Yeah, and a winner in the playoffs last season. You have to think he's in fantastic form heading into the playoffs this season.
And another thing he accomplished from this week was actually breaking in to the top 10 in the Comcast Business Tour top 10. He was 17th last week. You see, Tony Finau has made his way all the way up to number 7. And another name worth noting in there who's broken into the top 10, Cameron Young, in at number 9, up 4 places. And that's a heck of a statement from a rookie, Damon, to find himself in the business top 10 at this stage of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to see these players. Still lots to play for. You know, one more stop in Greensboro, and then we hit the FedEx Cup playoffs. All right, folks, after knocking on the door several times this season, Ayaka Furue is finally an LPGA Tour winner. We'll show you how the Japanese star in the making got the job done in style. And plus, Paige McKenzie is back right after the break. For more, we welcome in our own Paige McKenzie. Paige, tell us how Ayaka Furue got it done yesterday, because it was spectacular.
Yeah, I felt like the highlight reel could have been a lot longer based on the fact that she played so well. You saw some really great putts, and she talked about the putting after the round, but what stood out to me was actually the ball striking. We saw a couple good shots in that highlight, but going back to start her day, she birdied the first hole and then went on a run of 6 birdies in a row. And the length of the birdie putts that she had during that stretch was extremely small, starting here at the 8th. And then again, the following hole, this is her 4th birdie in a row, or that birdie stretch started at the 6th hole. And this is a player who is known for her ball striking, one of the most accurate players on the LPGA Tour off of the tee, and then into the green is hitting 72% of the greens, which says a lot because she's not a long hitter. So she's hitting longer clubs into a lot of those holes. This not so much on the 11th, the short par 3. The best shot of the day, or the closest birdie putt she had all day. An impressive display, and it all caps off with what she did on the 18th hole when she had stretched this. To this point, she was 9 under on the day, had gotten into a good cushion of a lead. Of course, the chasers were behind her, but then was able to split the fairway and then go on to, as we saw, birdie the 18th as well.
Paige, I've known you for almost a decade. One of my favorite things you always say is the importance of winning wherever you win, that winning begets winning. You know, what's the importance of Furue's 7 wins on the Japan LPGA Tour and how it led to yesterday's win?
Absolutely, Damon. She is a rookie in name only on the LPGA Tour, but even though she has a history of winning, you have to believe there is some hesitancy when moving across the world and playing on a different tour. Even though she did win 3 times last year on the JLPGA and was the player of the year, you have to think there still could have been a little nervousness. But to me, what stood out, not only to this win, but what I think gained some confidence for her was the Bank of Hope match play. It was an event on the LPGA Tour a couple months ago where she finished runner-up. And when you think about match play, and I say this every single year in match play events, that it could be an opportunity for a player to gain confidence, to really excel and have belief if they didn't, because it feels a little easier just going head-to-head. And for her, she was runner-up in that event a couple of months ago, and I feel like that was a bit of a springboard for her. She only had 2 top 20s on the LPGA Tour prior to that, and then now, obviously, a winner on the LPGA Tour.
Paige, you mentioned the match play tournament on the LPGA Tour. What more can you tell us about the significance of that event as it related to what we've just seen in Scotland?
Well, we saw Furue ultimately springboard that into a win on the LPGA Tour. But when you look at the 4 semifinalists, when the match play happened, it was not a blockbuster world ranking of the four semifinalists. In fact, if you look, Uniji ultimately won that. She was ranked 83rd at the time. Fuorowei was the odds-on favorite at 27th in the world. But Lilia Vu at 123rd and Andrea Lee outside the top 100 as well. You're thinking this isn't the most blockbuster group. After their finishes in the semifinals, you can see the world ranking improvement. But since then, this is what I find to be so impressive. Since then, all four of these players have gone on to use that event as a springboard and play even better. Eunhee Ji had a top 15 at the US Open and a top 10 at KPMG. Lilia Vu had a top 10 in a major championship at KPMG, and Andrea Lee top 15 at US Open and at Evian, two major championships. So when you look at what a match play event can do, this is a prime example of how players can use that experience and give them confidence moving into the rest of the season.
Well, one person who didn't appear to have a lot of confidence heading to the Trust Scottish Open was Celine Boutier. She was coming off a couple of missed cuts in a row. But you don't think it was that much of a surprise that she played pretty well last week, right?
I think there's two things that when I'm looking at who might be somebody to watch coming into a week. One is recent form, and the other is form at that event. And for Celine Boutier, she has an incredible trend at the Scottish Open, one of the best I've ever seen as far as trending goes. So back in 2018, the first time she played it, she finished a tie for 35th. The following year improved that by 9 places. 2020, she finished inside the top 20 in a tie for 18th. Last year, breaks into the top 10. We should have seen this coming, guys. A second place finish for her. Obviously, I don't think she was super happy with how her Sunday ended up, having the lead going into the final round. But when you go up against Fuorowei, who shoots 10 under on her final round, you didn't lose it. You got beat. And I think for Celine Boutier, she can take a little bit of confidence. The LPGA Tour, of course, staying in Scotland for the AIG Women's Open. And, of course, she's had this tremendous success in Scotland. It's worth mentioning that she also had a 4-0 record at Gleneagles in the Solheim Cup, which was, I think, a sparkling moment of her career. So maybe has some success in Scotland that she can take into next week.
Love that. Great info from Paige McKenzie. Paige, please join us next hour. We dig a little deeper in the Muirfield. Can't wait for that. Thank you, Paige.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
What's still to come on Golf Today, the European Ryder Cup team has its new captain. What will Luke Donald bring to the mix? And will the last couple of weeks have a lasting impact on Europe's prospects? We'll discuss right after the break. The final major championship of the year is here as the best women in the world battle over one of the finest links courses in the world. We'll talk about who is the most to prove as the AIG Women's Open kicks off at Muirfield in Scotland. And Jaime Diaz will stop by. He's covered Ryder Cup since Luke Donald was in short pants. We'll ask Jaime about the future of the greatest team event in golf as Golf Today continues.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
The 2023 European Ryder Cup team has its new captain, and it's Luke Donald. Following Henrik Stenson's dismissal 2 weeks ago, there was speculation as to who would replace one of the latest LIV Golf signees, and today, that question has been answered. Guy Kinnings, the director of European Ryder Cup team, had this to say this morning on the decision. Luke is a former world number one who possesses a superb Ryder Cup record, so he undoubtedly has the credentials required to be a successful European captain. He is hugely respected by the players and by the wider support team at Ryder Cup Europe, who have already done an immense amount of work behind the scenes to give him a strong platform for the remaining 14 months before the match gets underway. Luke Donald joined Golf Today earlier. This is what he had to say.
Luke, you said in your tweet what an honor this role is, but you're also some 4.5 months behind where you would have been had you been named back in March. How much can you revel in this moment, or is it about hitting the ground running and getting off with this job and getting some work done?
Yeah, I mean, I still have 14 months, Damon, and I think that's going to be plenty of time to get everything in order. I've certainly got a couple great vice captains already behind me that have done some of the work in the last few months, and I'll certainly be meeting up with them and getting the ball rolling. So I'm extremely excited about this journey, and I can't wait to get started.
Luke, did you have any hesitation in taking the role because of everything that was going on around it? And did you discuss the possibility of taking that role with some of the guys who will be the key members of your team next year?
No, it really never crossed my mind not to say no, because this is truly an honour for me. As I said, I've had so many great Ryder Cup moments and memories, and I think being a captain is like a lifetime achievement award in a way. And I've had some discussions with certain players, whether they thought I was the man for the job, and I just certainly wanted them to talk to the committee about, you know, who they thought would be a good fit. And obviously whether that was me or someone else, I thought it was important that the players certainly made their views appropriate to the committee. But I'm glad that things have worked out. I'm extremely excited about this opportunity. Can't wait to start getting going.
What type of captain will you be?
Well, I think I've, someone asked me that. Am I similar to any of the captains that I performed under? I think Bernard Langer kind of steps out in mind. I'm a very thoughtful kind of person. I like to think things through. Obviously, Lathabau's a little bit more of a quiet leader. I certainly think I'll be kind of in that kind of characteristic as well. But, I think... I've always tried to prove myself. You know, I don't think, I came from Europe and I went to US in the college system and kind of had to prove myself. I won a bunch of college tournaments. And then when I turned pro and played on the PGA Tour and the European Tour, I was this Englishman that didn't hit the ball very far. And probably not a lot of people thought I'd be that successful, but you know, I managed to get myself to world number one and stay there for 56 weeks. So there's a lot of inner desire and determination to succeed. And this certainly isn't about me, but the captaincy, I have a lot of thoughts about how we can give our guys the best opportunity to be victorious in Rome.
Some social media reaction now. 2018 Ryder Cup captain Thomas Bjorn, who will be one of Luke's assistants in Rome, using words like delighted, the right choice. Looking forward to working with Luke for the next 14 months to try to win the Ryder Cup back. Another European assistant, Eduardo Molinari, who is Italian. So happy for Ryder Cup Europe to name such a great captain in Luke Donald. He will be fantastic, will bring a lot of Ryder Cup experience, inspiration, and determination into our team. And a Ryder Cup hopeful and expected key cog, the Englishman Tommy Fleetwood, saying, "So happy for you, Luke Donald. I will do my very best to make your team in Rome." Got to think the straight-hitting Englishman will be a part of Luke Donald's team. For more, we welcome in BBC golf correspondent Ian Carter. Ian, it is great to see you. What is Team Europe getting from a Luke Donald captaincy, especially in light of the uncomfortable goodbye to Henrik Stenson?
I think you're getting a number of qualities. I think you heard them there, Damon, from him, that I always felt when he was up towards the upper echelons of his career, when he was at world number one and on his way to being world number one, there was always that drive to prove himself. And he said that very eloquently there. But it's combined with a little bit of, I don't know, British reserve, politeness, however you want to couch it, but they are important diplomatic skills for the role that he's now been given. I think he was unlucky to be overlooked when Henrik Stenson got the job. I think that everything that he said today, I've spoken to him at length. I know a lot of journalists have. I think every one of us will walk away from the conversations that we've had fairly confident that he's not going to, in his words, do a Henrik Stenson and renege on this and be lured by the millions from Liv.
Ian, the fact that, you know, we've lost, if you're a European Ryder Cup member, you've lost 5 months, essentially, from the appointment of Henrik Stenson to where they find themselves now with Luke Donald just getting started in the job. Does that increase the pressure on him with having a shorter runway? Or, in a way, does it decrease the pressure on him because he's kind of starting on the back foot and has a team that's in flux anyway? So is it less pressure on Donald than it would have been had he been named 5 months ago?
It's a, It's a double-edged sword, isn't it, Eamon? Because on one hand, you're right, it must lower the expectation level. I've just written a piece for the BBC Sport website, and this is the coronation of a Ryder Cup captain like never before. The circumstances are so fraught with uncertainty, and that is the worst aspect from his point of view. It's impossible for him to envisage how he's going to control the future when he doesn't know which players are going to be available to him because of the whole live situation. So that, in a sense, does lower the expectation level and does lower the pressure. But equally, he's got a month before the qualifying process begins. He's got to have some idea as to what is going to be happening with regard to that. And he has to get that around his head very, very quickly. He's got good people around him. The European Tour, as was DP World Tour, now Ryder Cup Europe, whichever moniker you want to give them, they have some very experienced people in this regard. But there is that added pressure that it is a home match. And of course, the Americans haven't won away from home this millennium. So there's a lot of desire from Zach Johnson's team, a lot of pressure around the whole thing. It's going to be fascinating to see how it unfolds in what are unprecedented times.
Ian, the American perception of Team Europe and the Ryder Cup has always been this cohesive unit, like the old Walton's television show. Good night, John Boy. You know, good night, Poulter. Good night, Luke. Good night, Sergio. But how messy has this back room been, and how many pieces does Luke Donald have to help pick up?
Well, he's got to pick them all up. That's the bottom line. He's got to find a way to fashion a future without the people who have been the stalwarts of that spirit that you described there, Damon, because Poulter, Sergio, Lee Westwood, Stenson, we all know that they have signed up to live. Are they going to be part of the Ryder Cup family going forward? That is a huge question for golf, not just Europe. And of course, America faced their own issues with the players who are no longer eligible for the PGA Tour because of their associations with LIV. And all of this is going to be seemingly thrashed out in courtrooms. And who knows when those outcomes will be made public and that the respective captains are able to make their decisions thereafter. It's an extraordinary sort of turnaround. And that is Donald's big challenge now. Without that personnel, without those driving forces of your Poulters, your Garcias and your Westwoods, and I think he's got a budget without them, he's got to find a way of harnessing that European spirit. And that, I think, will mean transferring an awful lot of responsibility on the likes of Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland and John Rahm going forward.
Well, Donald was very diplomatic earlier when he was asked about the LIV Golf situation in the sense that he can't really control it. It will be fought out in the courts. Decisions will be made by other people involved in this process, Ian. But to what extent is the sentiment against LIV Golf among the players who will be on his team an issue here as well? When you talk about the Rory McIlroys or the John Rahms or the Shane Lowrys and Matt Fitzpatrick's, guys like that who have very clearly staked out their turf on the other side of that argument.
Yeah, it's a good question. How comfortable would one of those guys be with being paired with, say, a Bernd Wiesberger, if Bernd Wiesberger is eligible? Let's take it a step further, given that he played pretty well over the weekend. What if Henrik Stenson qualifies for that team? How do you get a harmonious, cohesive unit? And also sort of tap into that underdog spirit, which is so important to Europe throughout their periods of actual favouritism in terms of how the results have panned out by and large. So again, massive, massive challenge there. And I think an awful lot depends on what happens out with golf in the courtrooms over the coming months, and whether or not someone can find a solution that brings together these very bitter enemies as they are at the top of this game and playing out what is a civil war in men's golf right now.
Ian, there are so many European lions in winter or lions that have gone to LIV, as the case may be. Do you think that there are enough young European players, whether it's the Hogard twins or Victor Hovland, who got a taste at Whistling Straits, to make 2023 ultra-competitive, which is really what the golf world wants?
I think so. I think that, you know, these players have an awful lot to do to prove themselves, but they're you know, the Højgaard twins, Guido Migliozzi, but bearing in mind his Italian roots, Robert McIntyre, these are the players that we've been talking about, but they've yet to break into the world's top 30, top 20, top 10, and they are not of the same stature as a Luke Donald was when he broke into the team back in 2004, and you can go through a whole list of really great European names, McIlroy, Rahm, Hovland, as we have now. So they've got a lot to prove, certainly over the coming year, coming 14 months. But this is an opportunity for them, and Luke Donald was making pains to say, look, you've got to make the most of this situation right now and try and come forward. And yes, you will be the underdogs, but you know, it's a home Ryder Cup. And I'll go back, Damon, to what I said before. America haven't won away this millennium. So I think it will be competitive at the very least.
That's a great point. Luke Donald may have his hands full, but Zach Johnson has his hands full as well. Ian, it's great catching up with you on this Monday. We'll speak to you soon.
Absolutely. Great to talk to you guys. Cheers.
All right. Ian Carter with the BBC. How about this notion of the European Ryder Cup team? Because I look at the history of this event, and I can't help but think about what is going to be lost when you had the potential for the latter day Seve and Ollie with Rahm and Sergio. Apparently, you know, the Ryder Cup had brought those two together because they were not the best of friends beforehand, or the storyline that we're going to lose with the potential of Phil Mickelson, who was supposed to be a layup Ryder Cup captain when it comes to New York in 2025 at Bethpage Black. And that's a storyline lost as well.
It is, but in a way, it's kind of unavoidable, because when you look at what players historically have talked about as underpinning the great Ryder Cup partnerships, it's trust. And that's gone. And it's irrevocably gone in a lot of these cases because, frankly, a lot of these guys, they were all aware of what the potential risk was to their Ryder Cup future if they went down the LIV Golf Road. They all knew that. The Poulters, the Westwoods, the Graham McDowells, the Sergios, didn't matter to them at that point. And now you're seeing a trend where they're kind of creeping around by the back door. Sergio has said that he was going to resign his membership of the European Tour because he wasn't loved enough. I kid you not, that's what he said, he wasn't loved enough. And now he's dried his tears sufficiently to say he's not going to resign while he waits to find out if he does actually have a role in the Ryder Cup in 2023. Now, he had a successful partnership with Luke Donald.
Yes.
In the early 2000s. They were a pretty dominant team in Ryder Cups. And he's clearly still keeping himself in the mix. Ian Poulter has not resigned his membership because Ian Poulter still fancies himself as a potential Ryder Cup captain at Bethpage in 2025. And a lot of this will, as both Luke Donald and Ian Carter have said, be resolved in the courts in terms of eligibility. But court decisions alone won't answer this question, because there are a lot of guys, not just those who have played Ryder Cups and those who we know will be on the team the next couple of years, but there's a generation of players coming up. Even the comments of Bob McIntyre that Ian Carter just mentioned there over the weekend, he talked about the idea of the disloyalty of these people. So the fact that an Ian Poulter could be named captain just by virtue of his legal eligibility to be so doesn't mean anybody's going to want to play for him. Mm.
The thought was that Sergio Garcia probably had Ryder Cup pajamas. We know that Ian Poulter had a Lego figurine of the Ryder Cup trophy. Were we just naive about the power of money, or did we overstate the love and fealty that we thought these players had to the European team?
I'm sure they don't see it as being any different. I'm sure they don't think cashing the check that they've cashed in any way diminishes the affinity or love they've had for the Ryder Cup over the years. But what they think doesn't actually matter. It's what the other players think and what those who make the choices in terms of captains and players for the Ryder Cup think. And it's clearly driven a significant wedge in. And on the European side, it's not really the players who are coming up who are the issue. There are really only two likely players over the next few years that they lost, which was Sam Horsfield and Laurie Kanter. Both of those guys were climbing up the world rankings. But they lost essentially a generation of captains. But I've argued ad nauseum that the captain should not have to give up the job every year after a winning captaincy if he wants to stay in it. You know, McGinley was a great captain. He had to give up the job to Darren Clark, who wasn't. Mm. And then Thomas Bjorn was a great captain who won by a wide margin. He had to give up the job because it was Padraig Harrington's turn who lost by a huge margin. The idea that the captaincy must transfer because of someone else's turn should die now. And if Luke Donald turns out to be a successful captain, win or lose, because winning or losing is not the only barometer of whether or not he's successful, then there's no reason why Luke Donald might not actually be a candidate in 25 as well.
Are the Europeans significantly behind at this point, or we've just not focused enough on the US side with Brooks and Bryson and DJ?
A lot of guys who didn't much care about the Ryder Cup to begin with. I don't think either team is in much trouble right now. I mean, you look at the top of the world rankings, there's so many impressive Americans with Justin Thomas and Scottie Scheffler and Tony Finau, all those guys. But you look at a Rory McIlroy, a Victor Hovland, John Rahm, neither team is struggling. Every team starts to get a little bit thinner as it works its way down the ranks, and that's really not going to change this time around. But the Ryder Cup is always about the foot soldiers who deliver when they're least expected to, never the generals.
No doubt there'll be more developments between now and 14 months' time. Folks, still to come on this Monday, the 2021-2022 regular season on the PGA Tour coming to an end this week. We're going to take an early look at next season's schedule. The Tour has announced the 2023 schedule. We'll dissect it after the break. Welcome back to Golf Today. The 2022-23 PGA Tour schedule has been released. And while there are many similarities to the schedule from this season, there are some notable changes to point out as well. Let's take a look. By the way, you see that $54 million purse increase. Zozo Championship moved ahead of the CJ Cup in October. And the Rocket Mortgage Classic, we just saw it in Detroit, won by Tony Finau, moved up to follow the Travelers Championship earlier in the year, end of June into July. So for more, let's welcome in Rex Hoggard. Rex, you've been speaking to a few people on the schedule. What can you tell us?
Well, there's a couple things that are worth pointing out, Damon. You addressed one of them. If you look at this year's schedule versus what they've just released looking at next year, it doesn't look a whole lot different. Now, there are some dramatic purse increases that you guys have addressed and that players are certainly going to pay attention to. But there's a couple of things that I wanted to point out. One is the change as we transition to this new schedule, that there's only going to be 70 guys who qualify from the regular season for the playoffs. That's down from what we all know was 125. I had a chance to talk with Mark Brazel, who's a longtime tournament director at the Wyndham Championship that's been the last event of the regular season for some time. And he said the idea for that tournament all along is that they've always kind of considered themselves sort of a play-in game or a wild card game. They always thought of themselves as maybe that fourth playoff event. This is only going to exaggerate that as guys fight even harder to get inside that top 70 versus the top 125. He feels like that's only going to help his field out that much more. Now, the other half of this equation is we're transitioning to a calendar schedule. That means what's going to happen in the fall. As you pointed out, the existing fall events that are there right now are likely going to transition to what the Tour is classifying as the qualifying events. Guys who finish outside the top 70 who are trying to get their status for the next season. Now, I did reach out to Davis Love III, who's been the host of the RSM Classic for some time, and he said he's not 100% sure what's going to happen starting next year for the fall, but he said the RSM Classic is in a very unique position because he said RSM has always viewed this particular tournament as more of an occasion to get their clients together at Sea Island during a very, very important time of year, late in the year, right next to Thanksgiving. It's always been something of a celebration. It's always a good time to do business. And he said he doesn't imagine that's going to be impacted by the quality of the field going forward. He did point out, though, that now that you have 70 players making it into the playoffs and the rest of them sort of scrambling, trying to keep their status for the next season, he doesn't imagine there's going to be that much different in field. But he also pointed out that it's going to be different for some events. The Houston Opens and the Bermuda Championships, they're going to face different challenges. But when it comes to RSM, he's confident that it won't be that different.
A new schedule, increased purses. Great having Rex Hoggard join us on this Monday. Eamon, when you look at this new schedule, the dollar signs are increased. How much of a bulwark is this against the rival LIV Golf Series?
Yeah, well, I think Jay Monahan's pointing out that it's not just Greg Norman who can throw money around in this game. And this is something that Monahan's been talking about doing for the last couple of years. And what's striking to me is the dollar figures attached to some of these tournaments. You know, the Players' Championship earlier this year was the first tournament on the PGA Tour that ever had a prize fund of $20 million. Next year, there are going to be seven such events on the PGA Tour, and you can see them here, the Invitationals, the World Golf Match Play Championship, and then a couple of the FedEx Cup playoff events. You then add in the bonus money that's out there as well, you know, the $75 million for the FedEx Cup, the Player Impact Program is 50, the Comcast Top 10 is 20, that's $145 million in bonus money out there. And I think what this is doing, whether by design or by coincidence, more likely by design, is the Tour is creating an elite tier of tournaments here. If you look at the way the ATP Tour runs in men's tennis, the Masters 1000 events, there are nine of them every year. Fans know that the best players in the world are showing up there. They're guaranteed that they're going to be there because it is the biggest tournaments and the best fields just shy of the Grand Slams. The list of tournaments that we just saw, starting with the Century Tournament of Champions, is with the $15 million and then all of the others that are $20 and $25 million, that's the tier that is being created here. And that's a significant change for the PGA Tour because it has held to this painfully democratic idea for so long that every week on tour
yes.
has the same weight.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. For players, it doesn't for fans. You know, there's an ebb and flow to the season. That's perfectly natural. And what this is doing, I think, is acknowledging that reality and creating events. And even Jay Monahan referenced this in his statement earlier today, that golf fans want to know when they're going to see the best players go head-to-head against each other, which, again, is another one of the live golf philosophies that we wanted to bring the best together. And they're bringing them together. They just aren't bringing the best together at this point. But that's what the PGA Tour is aiming to do here by creating this tier of upper-level invitational events where a huge pot of money is at stake.
Some of the complaints of Phil Mickelson through the years has been trying to protect, enhance, reward the play of the elite of the elite. Is that what we're finally seeing at last? Because he always seemed to think that the 120s, you know, why am I as a top 10 player, you know, carrying the water for number 95?
There's definitely a sentiment among elite players that too much gets paid to guys who play too little good golf.
Right.
And there's also the sentiment among the lower orders of the PGA Tour that too much is given to the guys on the top.
Sure.
That's fundamentally the organizational flaw of the PGA Tour, is that all of them have equal weight and equal voice in the room out there. But, you know, Phil did very well in well over $100 million between prize money and bonuses in his years on the PGA Tour. What Phil wouldn't be interested in this about is that this is money you actually have to earn. You have to play well to earn this money. You also have to earn the bonuses that are paid out here as well. Phil's game won't allow him to earn that money anymore. So LIV Golf is more an appealing prospect for Phil because it's guaranteed money and he doesn't have to play well, as we're evidencing that he's not playing well right now. But the guys who are going to cash in on this money, they're still going to have to earn it.